Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life.
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 7th episode. My objective for this podcast is to delve into the themes of horror, both real and imagined. Each episode, I will cover one movie in depth based on a theme of the month. Christmas was yesterday based on when this episode will be released, so happy winter solstice, Merry Christmas, Feliz Navidad, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and Happy New Year to all. Since we are past Christmas, I am now prematurely jumping into the Be Careful What You Wish For theme. This is my January theme, and I chose it because with a new year comes new hopes and aspirations. Sometimes what you wish for can turn out to be nothing like what you imagined. I think this is going to be the whole theme of 2025, quite honestly. Maybe you voted for Trump thinking the cost of groceries would go down. Be careful what you wish for, because maybe the price of milk goes down by a few cents, but your coffee goes up 20% due to tariffs. Maybe you wanted to have abortion banned, but be careful what you wish for, because now porn is also banned in the United States and women are afraid of getting pregnant, so you can't get laid. I think I made my point. The movies I'll be covering in this theme from now until the end of January are Wishmaster, Reanimator, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellraiser, The Room, and Wish Upon. A quick layout of this podcast. Each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I get into the true crime of it all. I am a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. In today's episode, I'm covering the first Wishmaster movie, made in 1997, directed by Robert Kurtzman, and written by Peter Atkins, with Wes Craven as the executive producer, starring Andrew Devoff as the Djinn and Tammy Lauren as our final girl. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie.
Wes Craven presents... He will tempt you with your every desire and will turn your wildest dreams into your worst nightmares. Wishmaster, be careful what you wish for. Rated R.
Once in a time before time, God breathed life into the universe, and the light gave birth to angels, and the earth gave birth to man, and the fire gave birth to the djinn, creatures condemned to dwell in the void between the worlds. One who wakes a djinn shall be given 3 wishes. Upon the granting of the 3rd, the unholy legions of the djinn shall be freed to rule the earth. Fear one thing in all there is. Fear the djinn. In Persia, during the year 1127 AD, the emperor made a wish that put a curse on his people. For his second wish, the emperor asked the djinn to show him wonders. The djinn uses his powers to torture and mutilate people in his palace. The people within the castle were transformed into monsters, and bloodshed was everywhere. Before the emperor could make his 3rd wish, Zoroaster, a sorcerer, interrupts and warns that upon the 3rd wish granted to the one who woke the djinn, a gateway will open between the worlds and the evil race of djinn can live on earth. The sorcerer then reveals a fire opal. The djinn is sucked into the jewel, where he remains captured.
The names of God, this is not what I wanted!
Then wish it away, exalted one. Wish it away.
Stop! No more wishes. I beg your majesty, silence. But my poor people, I must! Do you wish their fate on the entire world?
In present-day America, Raymond Beaumont is supervising workers as they lower a box containing an antique statue of Ahura Mazda onto a ship's deck. The worker who is lowering the crate is drinking on the job and accidentally drops it from his crane, killing Beaumont's assistant and destroying the statue. It breaks open, and the dock worker finds the fire opal inside, which he steals and pawns. The jewel ends up at the Regal Auctioneers, where boss Nick Merritt gives it to the appraiser Alexandra Amberson to examine. When examining the jewel, Alex sees something moving inside and has flashes of something she doesn't understand. Thinking there is something wrong with the jewel, Alexandra takes it to her lab worker, best friend, and potential love interest, Josh Aikman, to analyze. As he's collecting data, light reflections cause the gem to explode, and the djinn is released. Josh is badly hurt during the explosion, and the djinn takes this as an opportunity to grant him a wish. The djinn is very weak from being trapped in the jewel for centuries. When Josh agrees to wish his pain away, the djinn kills him, and he is able to take his full form. Alex seems to have a psychic link with the djinn. Every time someone makes a wish, she has visions.
Run, insect. Run and tell those you will what you will.
Alex is convinced she is responsible for Josh's death. When talking with her sister, Shannon, about her strange experiences and the guilt she is feeling about Josh's death, her sister stops her and lectures her on taking responsibility for things out of her control. She compares it to their parents' death and how it wasn't Alex's fault that they couldn't be saved in the fire. Alex was only able to save her sister from burning to death. Thinking the gem has something to do with the explosion and subsequent death of Josh, by threatening legal action, Alex is able to track the gem down to Beaumont, to whom the statue belonged. Beaumont tells Alex to visit a folklore professor named Wendy Derleth to find out more about Ahura Mazda and the gem. He also invites Alex and her sister, Shannon, to a party he is hosting. The folklore professor tells Alex about the jewel, the djinn, and its evil history. Later, Alex learns that the djinn needs to power the gem with the soul of humans that he grants one wish to, and then grant her three wishes before he can unleash the djinn on Earth. During this time, the djinn, who had been in demonic form, removes the face of a corpse in the morgue. The guy that works in the morgue walks in on the djinn doing this. When he's asked if he wishes not to see the thing that is happening in front of his eyes, he says yes, and his wish is granted. His eyes are removed so he can no longer see the acts taking place in front of him.
Oh my God.
Might understand this is not something you wish to see.
Uh-huh.
Very well.
The djinn takes on the dead man's form and name. Now, as Nathaniel, he goes about granting people wishes in return for their souls while he searches for Alex. He finally tracks down Alex's boss and grants him a greed-inflicted wish so that he can get Alex's address.
Hey, that's a very valuable piece.
Really? Would you like it to be 100 times as valuable?
Would I like it to be 100 times more valuable? Yes. What's my limit?
Your imagination.
Well, I'm not a greedy man. How about $1 million?
Alex is haunted by visions whenever the djinn grants a wish. She goes to Wendy's house to consult with her again, but Nathaniel has already killed her and taken her form. During their conversation, Alex realizes she is really talking to the djinn. He confronts her and asks her to make 3 wishes.
3 wishes, Alexandra. Doesn't that intrigue you? Just a little. Anything you want.
Anything?
You ask for anything, I must grant it.
He even gives her a test wish. She uses this wish and orders the djinn to kill himself. He complies by blowing his head off with a gun, yet the wound heals instantly. As the djinn is immortal, he cannot be killed. Alex then uses the first of the official 3 wishes. Her first being to know her opponent, the djinn.
Behold my true face.
Oh my god.
Yes, the shit just hit the fan, didn't it? Let's get this over with, shall we?
He teleports her to his terrifying world within the gem, thus demonstrating his true nature to her. Next, she wishes herself back into her apartment alone. The djinn had been threatening Alex's sister, so Alex sets about finding Shannon. She races to Beaumont's party, and Nathaniel follows. While talking to Nathaniel at the party, Beaumont makes the mistake of wishing his party would be unforgettable. And Nathaniel begins wrecking havoc by causing the art pieces to kill his guests.
I remember a certain potentate whose last party was talked about for centuries.
God, how I'd love to host a party like that.
The djinn finally corners Alex and traps Shannon in a painting where she is burning to death, trying to scare Alex into making the ultimate 3rd wish. Alex wishes that the dock worker had not been drinking on the job 2 days ago, undoing the events that followed and presumably reviving the djinn's victims back to life and trapping the djinn in the opal. The dock scene is shown again, and now sober operator has no trouble lowering the crate containing Ahura Mazda. Alex goes to see Josh at the lab. He notices that Alex is strangely pleased with herself, but she will not say why. She decides to take Josh up on the date he asked her on 2 days prior. Now, the statue of Ahura Mazda is displayed in Beaumont's private collection. The camera zooms inside the jewel and shows us the djinn on a throne waiting to be released. All right, let's get into the analysis of this film. This is not your genie in a bottle, baby, and you definitely don't want to rub this genie the wrong way, honey. We are a culture obsessed with our wishes coming true. It manifests itself in many different ways, whether that is trying to win the lottery or chasing the next get-rich-quick scheme, pyramid scheme. We are ravid for it, and it ends up turning into a problem for us way more than it pays out. What would you do if you had 3 wishes and you could have anything you wanted in the world? That's a nice thought, and we hope that most people would use these wishes in a way that wouldn't harm others, but I have 0 faith in our humanity at this point. On that note, some of the main themes in Wishmaster are temptation, careful wishes, the nature of evil, willpower, and exploitation. The film highlights how even seemingly innocent wishes can have disastrous outcomes when granted by a malicious entity, emphasizing the destructive power of unchecked desire. The best example of this is when Alex's boss wishes to have $1 million, and this wish is fulfilled with a flashback of Nick's mother putting him down as the beneficiary of her will, and then her plane blows up seconds after it takes off. We also have rich men in power wanting grand gestures because they already have everything they could ever want. The Persian emperor wants to see wonders, and Beaumont wishes for his party to be unforgettable. Both of these wishes parallel each other at the beginning and ending of the movie, where unexpected partygoers are victims to their desires. The importance of careful wishes. By showcasing how the djinn interprets wishes literally, the film emphasizes the need for precision and thoughtfulness when making a wish, as even slight misinterpretations can lead to horrific consequences. This can be applied to writing a paper, making laws, running a campaign to become president. This is definitely something that our government is really aware of, and they purposely take advantage of this. Our final girl, Alexandra, played by actress Tammy Lauren, learns this lesson the hard way, but then she learns and uses it to her advantage. First, she finds out that the djinn can't be killed after he blows his brains out upon her wish for his death. Then he traps her in the gem when she wishes to know what the djinn is. Her second complete wish is now a throwaway to get out of the situation. And her third wish is carefully crafted so that no other interpretation can be made. All right, so the nature of evil. The djinn represents pure evil. Pure, unchecked. Well, no, he is checked. He's trapped until someone has given him those three wishes, and then he's free to rule the world. But for right now, he is being checked. He takes pleasure in manipulating people's desires to inflict suffering and chaos. As a genie, Wishmaster is immortal, and he can twist your words any way he pleases for his desired outcome. He's not able to relinquish the full agony he wishes upon humanity unless he gets those three wishes. Then we've got the power of the human will. So in this theme, our protagonist, Alex, must use her intellect and determination to outsmart the djinn and prevent him from fulfilling his goal. This is not an easy task, and she can't just give up. She knows that if she does, the fate of the world is based on her decisions. I get stressed having six cats, a daughter, and a husband that rely on me. It's through sheer willpower that she doesn't give in to any of his pressures, especially when her sister is trapped in the painting and playing on all of her worst fears. He even says at the end, she says, "You can't kill me if I'm dead. You can't get your third wish." And his response is that he doesn't need her to be dead. He just needs her to wish she was dead. So we've got the exploitation of desperation going on. The film depicts how the djinn specifically targets individuals with deep desires, exploiting their vulnerabilities to grant twisted versions of their wishes. This is most prevalent in characters that just want the pain to end or something to stop, like the guy in the morgue getting his eyes taken out because he doesn't want to see the horrible things happening in front of him, or the homeless man who is an unwitting victim when he wishes for the pharmacist to get cancer. That whole scene has a lot to offer when it comes to social commentary. some of my favorite lines come from that scene. And I'm going to insert that clip here.
Don't tell me how to run my business. You're a fucking bum.
Well, you don't tell me how to run my life. You're a fucking prick. I'll talk to anybody I want to. You don't own this fucking sidewalk.
You want to know something? I do own this fucking sidewalk. You want to know why? Because I pay fucking taxes.
Fuck you.
No, fuck you!
I hope you die, you sack of shit. I hope you die, and I hope you float down the gutter so I can fucking piss on you. Bald-headed baboon. Piss-complected afterbirth of a Chinese gangbanger. Educated idiot!
When the djinn inquires what he would give for his enemy to die, he says he only has a cigarette and a handshake right now. Then he is reminded of his soul. He responds by saying that he would trade his soul for a shower and a jug of Jack. Eventually, the homeless man says he would like the pharmacist to die of cancer, not realizing how fast that death would come. When he runs off, the djinn has a whole dialogue about the man being an insect and to tell others that there's something out there feeding on wishes. To tell them quickly while he still has a soul. It's clear that the homeless man is a messenger bee intended to exploit the desperation of our most vulnerable populations in order to fulfill his soul count. In the writing of the djinn in Wishmaster, the victim is not required to begin with the words, "I wish." Saying "I want" or even simply agreeing with the djinn is enough for the creature to take your soul. He doesn't even have to tell you what you're agreeing to. Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin, was released only 5 years prior. In this version, Genie has a seemingly endless contract that has to be signed before Aladdin can start making his wishes. And there is a whole song and dance about what Genie can and cannot do. The folklore professor named Wendy Derleth makes reference to Aladdin and Robin Williams as the genie. She makes it very clear that these childhood stories and fairy tales started from a much darker place. This can be applied to any fairy tale or folklore. Most of these stories have been handed down for centuries and have unknown origins. While these examples are very different versions of the legend of the djinn, they do have similarities. Let's get into some of these wishes with unintended consequences. The Persian emperor makes a vague wish about seeing wonders. The djinn unleashes all manner of horror upon the people in his palace. I was definitely wondering what was happening to each person, with each transformation being more terrifying than the next. "I wish to know what you are." He takes Alex into the stone and traps her. Get cancer and die scene, the most aggressive cancer in the history of cancer. "I wish to be beautiful forever," turned into a mannequin. That's one way to go plastic. The detective wants to see the perp caught red-handed. The man starts shooting everyone up in the police station. Definitely got him. "Go through me." The guard is turned into glass and the djinn smashes through him. Nick says he would like the piece to be 100 times more wealthy. And then, so the piece is turned into gold. And then he wishes for $1 million and his mom's plane blows up, leaving him with $1 million inheritance. So one of the major players in this movie is the practical effects. They are magnificent. The woman that turns into a tree is beautifully done in the beginning, in the opening scene of the movie. The creature that bursts out of the guy's stomach and starts gnawing away on his wife's wrist had me laughing and rewinding to watch it again. There's the guy that falls to the ground and his skeletons bursting from his skin. It's just like brilliantly done as he's bursting out. But then it goes to this like CGI that is really funny and campy because the skeleton starts to like harass people. And you can't be too serious when you have a skeleton covered in bloody goo harassing you. not just a skeleton, but a CGI skeleton harassing you. Then there's like the lizard man who reminded me of a Doctor Who storyline. Another CGI moment is when the security guard is turned into glass and then the djinn smashes the glass to go through him. It was really cheesy, very much of its time for CGI. I can see why someone would think that's like horribly done, but I think it has its charm. While very cheesy, this is definitely a film of its time, and I appreciate the effort to create these campy scenes. I don't know if it was intended to be funny, but that was the effect. When it comes to practicals, the prosthetic job on the djinn himself does not disappoint from any angle. From top to bottom, he is mesmerizing. Like every little detail, every tendril, every fold in his skin, every bump on his head is just beautifully done. The chest of the djinn and how it's like armor at the top is just, it. He looks like a warrior, a demon warrior. And it's mwah, beautiful. There are also cameos that are definitely worth mentioning. Candyman himself, Tony Todd, is the bouncer at the end of the movie. We've got Freddy Krueger as Balmont, the collector. There's also Phantasma's Reggie Bannister is the pissed off pharmacist. And then we've got that hobo. So George Buck Flower plays the homeless man. He is a distinctive character actor, writer, and interpreter of homo life. Or hobo life, not homo life. I'm sorry, hobo life. If you are a horror enthusiast, you might spy that the Pazuzu statue from The Exorcist is among Balmont's treasures, and its stone tentacles snake out to tear into some guy's face. Wishmaster is a showcase of the effects department, and that's what makes it outstanding, if not an unbelievably silly B-movie treasure. So, tropes, real quick. Let's go through these tropes. We've got the Achilles heel. The djinn has one main weakness. He can only use his powers in the service of wishes. He cannot use them for himself. The poor unfortunate souls. The souls the djinn captures are in a Hellraiser-like dimension. Be careful what you wish for. The tagline of the movie is also a trope. Big sister instinct. We've got Alex and she just has to protect her sister. We've got a catchphrase. Every time the djinn grants a wish or just someone agrees with him, he says, done. And that means that your soul is his. So we've got the trope of deal with the devil who, you know, djinn is, he's not the devil, but he's pretty damn close. And if you deal with him, you're giving your soul away. So might as well be the devil. We've got death by materialism. We've got the trope of everybody lives happily ever after in the end. We just have to give that nice feeling. We can't let everyone die. This all happened. It was so sad, but look, we fixed it. With the exception of the people in the prologue, everyone who dies is brought back and everything's normal again. So another trope, I will punish your friends for your failure. The djinn resorts to threatening and torturing Alex's friends and loved ones to force her to aid in his plan. That can be a very persuasive tactic. It's like a gangster. That's why they do that. Come after your family. The djinn is defeated in the first film when the third wish is used to prevent him from being released in the first place. So let's just stop that drunk asshole from dropping that crate, and then we can avoid this whole thing.
Ready to play? Don't make a wish. Wishmaster
careful what you wish for.
There isn't much in the world of true crime that connects to our villain, the Djinn. But we do have folklore and religious beliefs connected to the Djinn, otherwise known as genie. They are invisible creatures in early pre-Islamic Arabia and later in Islamic culture and beliefs. Like humans, they are accountable for their deeds and can be either believers or disbelievers, depending on whether they accept God's guidance. Djinn are neither innately evil nor innately good. Djinn are not a strictly Islamic concept. They may represent several pagan beliefs integrated into Islam. Islam places djinn and the humans on the same plane in relation to God, both being subject to God's judgment and an afterlife. The Quran condemns the pre-Islamic Arabian practice of worshipping or seeking protection from them. Although usually invisible, djinn are supposed to be composed of thin and subtle bodies and can change at will. They favor a snake form, but can also choose to appear as scorpions, lizards, or humans. They may even engage in sexual affairs with humans and produce offspring. If they're injured by someone, they usually seek revenge or possess the assailant's body, requiring exorcism. Djinn rarely meddle in human affairs, preferring to live with their own kind in tribes similar to those of pre-Islamic Arabia. Individual djinn appear on charms and talisman. They are called upon for protection or magical aid, often under the leadership of a king. Many people who believe in djinn wear amulets to protect themselves against the assaults of the djinn, sent out by sorcerers or witches. A commonly held belief is that djinn cannot hurt someone who wears something with the name God written on it. I guess it doesn't matter what God it is as long as it says God. I found the possession part very intriguing, so I started to do some digging on the internet to see if anyone was ever harmed in one of these rituals. In a paper published online by Cambridge University Press, I was able to find specifics about djinn possession and how it relates to mental health. Possession worldwide is found more commonly in women and marginalized groups and may be a vehicle through which they can express their complaints in a context in which they can be heard. Spirit possession generally occurs in cultural contexts in which the self is more likely to be fragmented. By no means are all cases of possession seen as signs of illness. For example, during Tsar ceremonies in Egypt and Sudan, women become possessed by Tsar spirits who speak through them. Such experiences in the West would likely be deemed pathological. Anthropologist Emma Cohen further notes that spirit possession concepts fall into two varieties. So there's one that entails the transformation or replacement of the identity. So this is going to be the executive possession. In the executive possession, the afflicted individual acts as though their identity has been displaced by the possessing spirit. This is more like a demon. In the other type of possession, the spirits are the cause of illness and misfortune. So this is the pathogenic possession. In the pathogenic type of possession, the spirit is an explanation for abnormal behaviors, while the identity of the supposed afflicted individual remains intact. Being possessed by demons or evil spirits is one of the oldest ways of accounting for bodily and mental disorders. The idea that spirit possession and mental illness are related has a long historical legacy. Throughout history, mental illness has been attributed to demonic possession. The oldest references to demonic possession derive from the Sumerians, who believed that all diseases of the body and mind were caused by sickness demons called Giddim. I think I said that right. The Gospels report Jesus regularly exorcising evil spirits. During the Middle Ages of Europe, possession and witchcraft was considered as one of several causes of mental illness. A large number of alleged witches and possessed persons who were burned during this time had mental disorders. Faith healers typically employ a range of religious interventions to treat affliction by the jinn, of which the most widely used are rugya, seeking refuge with Allah by reciting certain verses from the Quran. So the faith healer would recite the Quran over water and instruct the individual to drink the water afterwards. Alternatively, so the water can be recited over with certain scriptures from the Quran or certain verses from the Quran, and then they blow into the water and tell the sick person to wash with this water. In videos I watched, there was prayer with a laying of hands on the possessed person to help expel the jinn from the individual. The possessed person acts in a way that is recognizable to the beliefs and traditions of like a Christian or Catholic exorcism. There's convulsions, screaming, seemingly uncontrollable actions by the person experiencing the possession. I wasn't able to find any jinn exorcism stories that resulted in injury or death of the person possessed. Definitely emotional abuse is there, and observable in footage of the exorcisms, and physical abuse is extremely likely in anything like this. I watched some videos on YouTube of a jinn exorcism, and they are not nearly as graphic or violent as the imagery connected to exorcisms done by the Catholic Church. It is exorcism light, if I say so, and I do. The belief of a jinn possessing someone is not as extreme as the Christian and Catholic belief that a person is possessed with a demon. Jinn are not good nor evil, whereas demons are definitely evil and makes the person possessed a threat. The Christian and Catholic version of possession has much more severe implications as a whole. With Christian and Catholic practices, we have many documented cases of death related to the exorcisms themselves. Most recently, a 3-year-old child was murdered during an exorcism, and her family members have been arrested. This family was seemingly of Christian faith because I found references to church in the Bible in the article I read about them. Annalise Michel is a famous case most people have heard of, and it's been covered by many podcasts. This one is related to the Catholic Church. She ended up dying. Last podcast on the left did an amazing job. They have like a 2-part series on that case. Let's end on a high note.
Was it worth it?
If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene, especially if you're local. It'd be great to meet up. I'm also thinking about making mini episodes. Because I have like a theme of the month, I was thinking if there's a movie that fits into my theme that I'm not covering that month, if you wanted to email me and tell me why it fits into that theme, I am thinking about making mini episodes called like horror highlights of just like movies that fit into a category. So if you have a movie you can think of that fits into Be Careful What You Wish For, you can email me at screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com. This is now trademarked by me, Horror Highlights by Jenica Olin, Scream Queen Podcast. I don't actually know how that works, but I'll pretend like that is the thing now. If you're in the Orlando area, I have a horror event each month. My one for December already passed, and we also had Market of the Beast recently. I'm hoping that all went really well for everyone involved. I had put together a reenactment of the Terrifier 3 Santa Mall scene. It came out really well. I think everyone was really happy. Our security guy at Conduit, Ryan, did a phenomenal job being Art the Clown. He is just like a silly guy, and he got so into it. He was amazing. Right now, the date of my next trivia, well, it's not really a trivia night. It's, do you like horror? Are you wanting to connect with more people in the horror scene? Do you like watching horror movies on a bigger screen? Do you like drinking and being in a room that is themed and decorated? Do you like taking pictures with your friends and going out and just enjoying horror culture? Well, I have an event for you. It is my monthly horror night at Conduit. If you come, you can enjoy all of those things with me and with others. As of right now, my January event is going to be, I believe, on the 20th, so it's going to be a Monday. The theme is Be Careful What You Wish For. The movies I'll be covering are Wishmaster, Reanimator, and Pan's Labyrinth, specifically for that event. So my trivia portion of the night will be based off those three movies. Within that theme, I'm also doing Hellraiser, The Room, and Wish Upon is the last one I'm covering. My goal is to have an episode a week. Please be patient with me as I'm also learning this stuff as I go. I am getting better. I know my interviews with other people have been super, like the audio has been really bad. And it's because that part is a lot harder to record than by myself. So I'm still learning that piece and I'm going to get better at it. My next episode will have a guest. That next episode is going to be on Reanimator. Thank you for listening and be careful what you wish for. Until next time, goodbye.